Hello, friends. Welcome to another program of Two Guys with Heart, with Giff Briner and Dave Colonen. These two fine Christian gentlemen will do their very best to bring encouragement to your faith. We all undergo difficulties throughout our lifetime. How do we respond, and what is the correct direction that we should take? Giff and Dave will give it their best shot to guide our lives through the work and words of Jesus. And now, here they are, Two Guys with Heart.
Good afternoon, friends. Hey, it's Giff Briner here, another program of Two Guys with Heart. We have a very exciting program for our listeners. Me and my good friend,
Dave Colonen.
David, it's always good to have you with us.
Wouldn't have missed it for the world.
Well, our listeners look forward to hearing you. You always provide some great inspiration to this program, and I hear comments all the time. They wanted to know more about Dave Colonen. So you do provide some positive contributions to our listeners, and they really look forward to what you have to offer every week. Today we have an interesting subject to start talking about, and that's general appearance. You think appearance is very important? Well, it sure is, not only personally, but in our professional world. And just about everything we do. Cereal. You ever notice good old breakfast cereal, David? And you open up the box, it just looks like ordinary old cornflakes laying here in the box. But the box makes it look good. Doesn't it sound good? Look how beautiful this box is. There must be some good-looking cereal inside. Well, that's kind of how it works, doesn't it? We have to make things look good. The outward appearance is very sensitive. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to downplay it, because clothing is important, our personal appearance. In fact, Proverbs chapter 7, I looked that up. And I wanted to see what it would say in Proverbs 7. I think it was verse 10. Talked about a woman who all of a sudden wanted to deceive a gentleman because her husband was out of town on a long journey. So she gave herself the appearance of one who was immoral, and seduced a gentleman into joining her for the evening. It says that right in the scriptures. It doesn't mix any words. You know, what they're trying to say is your appearance on the outward cover can be meaningful, or it can be an illusion. We should never cast aspersions based on someone's outward appearance. And that's important to understand that. Jesus knew that. Jesus saw a scared and weary woman when she had married five times. Remember that story? He saw beyond her failures and her reputation. He saw her heart. He saw a desire to be changed. As she was the golden bridge for Jesus to walk into the heart of many of those people in those cities. Here's some scripture from John chapter 4. And many of the Samaritans of that city believed on him, and the saying of the woman which testified, he told me all that I ever did. Remember her saying that? Jesus had these experiences, and he did not judge that woman based on her appearance. He knew different. He knew what was in her heart. People saw Zacchaeus as a conniving, deceptive tax collector. Jesus saw a confused man who longed for a change of heart. People of Israel saw Absalom, you know, a handsome, articulate leader. He was a traitor and a liar. Samson thought Delilah was the most beautiful woman he had ever met. She was a trap that destroyed his status in the world. An interesting story was shared recently by a friend of mine in Florida. She owns a clothing store. She said, I have had ladies come into my store who look like they had not a penny to their name, yet purchased thousands of dollars worth of clothing. And then they get into the chauffeur-driven limousine, and they drive away. You could not tell what they possessed by what they wore. You see, nothing is ever as it first appears. Start listening for attitudes in people. Start listening for hurts, and don't misjudge them. Jesus knew that. David, the world we walk through provides a lot of options for us to consider. And I'd be the first to admit, I've already looked at someone and thought, oh my goodness, I don't want to be around that person. I want to get away from them as soon as possible. And I'm ashamed to admit that I have sensed that already. It doesn't happen to me often, but it has happened. What do you tell people when they misjudge someone because of their appearance? Do you have any pastoral recommendations for us to adhere to?
Well, when I was just starting life, I was in a different world. I grew up in a poor home and didn't have any clothes to my name that were worth anything. And boy, the preacher helped me to get to Bible college. And when I went to leave, I didn't take anything with me. I didn't have anything to wear. It was difficult. And I tell you, when the day came that I could buy a new suit, and I wore it to bed, I was so proud of it.
Yeah.
Then I joined a group, singing group, and you know, in the singing group in the 50s, well, I'm really dating myself now.
Mm-hmm.
In the 50s, if you were in a group, you had to have the same clothes, the same shoes, the same socks, the same cufflinks. You weren't a team unless you had cufflinks, and they big, big, bold. Oh my goodness, and a tie that matched, white shirts that were made by, you couldn't buy them in the store, you had to send them away for them. I went through all that. I got to the place where our team, we really jumped at a chance to look right.
Yeah.
Boy, is it a different age now, isn't it?
Oh, yes, it is.
I went to church the other day, and the song leader was wearing a hat. I didn't get over it. Maybe I'm still not over it. To me, there's certain ways that you live, certain ways you can't handle. I'm glad I'm where I'm at, because by the time they change again, dear knows what in the world they will wear. Everything goes on the platform these days.
Yeah.
The more outlandish it is, or how cheap it is, or yeah. How people are willing to do anything today to be a part of life.
And look different. Everyone wants to look different.
Every church is, we used to go to church looking like $1 million.
Give of the best to your master. Remember singing that?
Right.
We always wore our good suits to church on Sunday. Now they wear brand new clothes that look like they wore out. Patches, and then they're wearing flip-flops. Times have changed, haven't they, Dave?
I guess it's true that Jesus doesn't judge people by their outward appearance.
Yeah.
That would have been, you know, we looked at people who came into church, like a bum on the street came on the back row. We used to chew him out. Now he's good for the platform.
That's right.
If he wants to be. And all of you home, you're telling you're going through your whole church. Who wears what?
Yes.
And how you've changed in the last 10 years, and where you're going for the next 10. That's the way it is.
Well, the important thing I think we're to note is that we shouldn't base anyone judge them based on their appearance, at least initially. Now, you know, after a while, if you're working in a computer environment. And someone comes in with the same T-shirt on all week, and they're wearing patched-up blue jeans. You know they're a bit fiddler, and they're right where they belong, working on that computer, writing software. That's just the nature of those people. That's just how they are. So that's different than someone who shows up on Sunday morning and walks into the pulpit with the same appearance. They don't fit together. You know what I'm saying? So we have to be careful that we don't misjudge people just because they might look drastically different. Maybe they have some kind of a reason for that. Maybe they're Albert Einstein in disguise, and they don't particularly care what their hair looks like or what their jeans look like. Or it doesn't matter to them. Well, I don't know. Is that so wrong? Was it so wrong 2,000 years ago? I don't think so. So we have to be careful before we pass judgment on the appearance. Any suggestions or recommendations you would have for our current generation?
I think when I look back, it's amazing what people think about as to where they sit in church. It's the clothes, and then it becomes where you're sitting. Some people feel like if you sit in the front row, you're really spiritual. And yeah. other folks, they say, look, there's no difference than the front row and the back row.
Right.
But a lot of people would say, man, if you sit in the back row all the time, what kind of a Christian are you? Isn't that crazy the way life goes? And yeah. when you get yeah. lots of people and the church is full and yeah. everybody's doing their own thing. Yeah. It's really amazing today. I try to live my life just like I always did.
Yes.
I still wear a tie 99% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Even if I'm the only one in the church with a tie, I'm yeah. still happy. I'm not any more spiritual.
That's
I'm
right.
not any more, any better than anybody else. I just, that's the way my father
just
taught
the way
me
you
how
were
to
raised.
Dress.
Yes.
And why should I change now?
I'm with you, my friend. I'm with you. I agree that our appearance is somewhat important, but at the same time, we have to be flexible enough to not pass judgment. Let's move on here.
I think I hear people in our yes. audience back on the radio. They're in their house saying, get off that clothesline thing. Come on. Talk about something worthwhile.
Yes. Well, you know, you did say something there that that kind of struck me, and because I remember your wife saying a similar once upon a time, I believe not in this program, but it's still good news today. I believe we were doing it. And Judy said, you don't sit in the back row. That's the sinner's row to sit in church. And you just made reference just here within the last 2 minutes about sitting in the back. What kind of a Christian sits in the back? David, I never had the courage to fess up. I sit in the back row.
Still today?
Yes.
Oh, man.
But I should explain why. Years ago, before our church was air-conditioned, we opened the door in the back of the sanctuary, and that was our airflow. That was it. And my father really minded the heat considerably. He would break into a sweat if the temperature was anything above about 72 degrees. And he wanted to sit back close to that door. So we always sat in the back, in that very back row. He'd get in there early so we could sit in that row, being in the back row. Hmm. Now, my father passed away 20 years ago, but we still sit in the back row.
You're still sitting on the back row. Yes, yes.
So old habits are hard to break, aren't they?
Right.
However, I fessed up that I sit in the sinner's row, but I also had to fess up for the reason why. So, let's move on. Repetition. I want to talk about repetition because there's a lot of references to that in the Bible, and I try to keep our program as scriptural as I can. Repeating something is what you eventually believe. Who was I'll start out by asking you a question, David. Who was the first president of the United States?
George Washington.
Okay. Now, you weren't alive when George Washington was our first president, were you?
No.
But not exactly. The point is, you and I both believe, and in fact, all of our listeners believe, that the first president of the United States was George Washington. Well, why is it that we are so convinced that that is the correct answer? Because we've heard it again and again and again and again and again. Scientifically, I believe the numbers are 16. If you hear the same thing repeated 16 times, that's embedded in your mind as being an absolute fact. And that's what we're taught to
I've never
try to
heard
remember that.
I heard many times that nobody ever put a number on it.
I have to confess, I just recently learned that myself. I'm not going to
Is
say
that out of your church?
Yeah. No. That's something that I read recently about repeating. The idea is to be able to repeat a message. I always advocated you have to hear things three different places. If you want somebody to really absorb something, you call them on the phone, you send them a text, you send them an email, you write them a letter, you send them a postcard, you talk to them personally. Three contacts, whatever it is, newspapers, magazines, whatever it is, three times when people hear it, then they have it for life. Commercials on TV. Did you ever notice the same commercial was on again and again?
They don't believe in 16. They believe in 100.
That's right. The idea is repetition. If you hear it again and again and again and again and again, you tend to believe it. And that's why we have those commercials on TV over and over and over and over and over. You're going to believe it if you hear it often enough. That's simply how it is. Well, Jesus taught that same thing again and again as well. Then Jesus spoke unto them, and he says, I spoke to them again. In John chapter 8, verse 12 says that. You see, somebody taught you everything you know. And that's the point of sharing this thought process. Everything you know, somebody shared with you. And they perhaps told you again and again and again. There was a time in your life when you could not spell the word cat. There was a time in your life where you could not count to 10 properly. You learned, someone patiently taught you that by going over it again and again and again. Well, sometimes when we're working with other people, your children, fellow students, co-workers, people who are working for you, your boss trying to teach you. Sometimes we have to hear it again and again and again before it registers. Jesus did that. He repeated the same thing to his listeners again and again. Sharing the good news, sharing the gospel, is something that we all need to hear again and again. The words of Jesus have to meld into our lives and not just to our heads temporarily. It has to become a part of us. That's why we go to church every week, to be fed, to hear it again and again and again, till it becomes a part of us. Like, who was the first president of the United States? The next thing you know, we should be able to answer all the biblical questions in the same fashion. So it's the law of repetition. People should understand how important that is in order for you to totally digest and absorb the words that Jesus has for it. We need to hear it again and again and again. And that's what Tomorrow Thinkers are all about, too. Remember, I think we allude to that a little bit last week or the week before last, about Tomorrow Thinkers, people who think in the future, people who are thinking ahead of time. That's important. We're talking about the repetition and hearing things. We also should understand that Jesus was a tomorrow thinker. He was always looking down the road. The Japanese companies have changed their ways in the last 50 years. Remember when you and I were kids, something that said made in Japan was junk? Sure isn't true anymore, is it? Just the opposite. Well, somebody had a 100-year plan. They were thinking ahead. They were thinking for tomorrow. Jesus was a tomorrow thinker. When he met the Samaritan woman at the well, he barely mentioned that she had been married 5 times. He pointed to her future. He said that I will give you water, that you will never thirst again. He was looking forward and trying to overlook the past. It's history. What happened to you a long time ago is ancient history. Let's look for tomorrow. Another remarkable illustration of tomorrow thinking concerns a woman who was caught by the act of adultery. Remember reading that in the Bible? I never discussed it. Jesus never discussed her sin. He was simply said, neither do I condemn thee, but go and sin no more. Remember that John chapter 8, verse 11. I just read that, didn't read it very well. But that's what he said, go and sin no more. He wasn't belaboring on the past. He was looking to the future. You see, remember ye not the former things, nor consider the things of old. Behold, I will do a new thing. Now it shall spring forth. Shall ye not know it? I will even make a way in the wilderness and the rivers and in the desert. Isaiah chapter 43, verse 18 and 19 reads that way. You see, Satan discusses your past. That appears to be the only information he has. Jesus discusses your future. He enters your life to the end of your past and gives birth to tomorrow. Stop thinking about the past and take this journey into yesterday. That's a terrible thing that we've all had shortcomings in our past. We've all made mistakes. You can't dwell on those things that were incorrect. Jesus concentrated on the future, and I would encourage you to also concentrate on your future. Be a tomorrow thinker and let those shortcomings of your past go by the wayside. But, you know, we were talking about happiness as well. Well, sometimes we associate rich people as happy people. Do you think that's true, David? Does money have something to do with your happiness and being content?
Money has a lot to do with it, but it's not everything. People who have only money and nothing else, they got money, but they're not happy. And they are people who are full of money and full of information, but your heart, that's where the happiness comes from. It doesn't come from all the other things. Your heart, when it is empty, your life is empty as well. People read the Bible and they find that it talks about the deceitfulness of riches. Jesus talked to the rich.
Yes,
he
did.
Looked into the very eyes and saw a longing for something that money couldn't ever buy. They came to him late at night when the crowds were gone. They were lonely. And then they were seeking Jesus to say, tell us more about how we can be happy. Prosperity is having enough of God's provision to complete his purpose for your life.
Well spoken, sir.
That's a major statement.
That is a major statement, yes.
You probably possess more today than any time in your whole life.
Yep.
I think that's true for all of us.
Probably, yes.
Somebody said the other day that every family has $17,000 worth of junk in their basement, in their garage, everywhere.
Yeah.
And if we only, you know, realize how much money there is in America in just junk.
Yeah, things that we don't need. Yeah. Yeah, that's probably true. We do. I think we live a better life financially, probably better now. Than ever. That's just, and we don't like to admit it. It's always, I'm having trouble paying my bills. But the truth is, most of us are better off now than we were 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. And it's just a hard pill to swallow sometimes.
Is it true that you laugh when you're older?
I think so.
You laugh a lot, Jeff?
I think so. I'm not a fool, but I laugh a lot. Yeah. I think that's what the measurement of happiness is, to be able to smile and find some humor in all of your life. You see, it's not money that matters. That's the parallel that I'm trying to draw here. It's the people in your lives that really matter, and you can't buy happiness. Money has nothing to do with it. There's very little. I mean, the old saying is, you know, I can be a lot to... more smiles on my face if I have a fat checkbook than I have a blank checkbook. And okay, there might be some truth in that, but that in itself does not make you a happy person.
You think you have more friends now than you've ever had?
Boy, that's a good question to ask.
At your age,
yes.
You know, you should have been building.
Yes.
We should be building every day new friendships.
Yes. Yes.
Because they are worth more than money.
Absolutely. I quite agree.
I think in my years of travel, I met people high and by kind of situations, sitting in a pew and I'm on the platform, never talk to them, never know anything. But now that I'm retired, I have time to sit and talk.
Yes, you get to know people.
I'm stretching myself to be a friend and have a lot of people that want to be with me or around me or say something to me or... I think that's
meaningful.
That's very meaningful as you get older.
It makes you happy.
And if you, in the listening audience, you're still young.
Yeah.
It's time to start building friendships now, not when you're 75.
That's right. Friendships that will last. Yes. And that's the parallel I was going to draw when you asked that question. I had hundreds of good friends over the years, but many of them are gone for whatever reason. I mean, some of them physically have passed away. Some of them have moved away. Some of them are just, their life has taken a different direction. I no longer see them. But these are the people that matter. And it's not the dollars. The dollars come and go. But those people are part of your very life, and they always will be. David, we've covered a lot of sensitive material today, and I'm looking forward to continuing this thought process tomorrow. But you know, for something, for now, our time is exhausted. It goes so quickly. Our engineer says that, hey, you guys, it's time to wrap it up. So we have to encourage our friends to pay heed, close attention to our words, try to stay happy, forget your past, keep smiling and move forward. And for right now, this is Gift Briner saying we have to say bye-bye for now.
Hey, Dave Colonin here. Some things matter more than money. Never forget it. Look for those things today. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.